This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show, listeners from 164 countries worldwide, and a very Merry Christmas to you. It is actually Christmas Day as I record this. However, you will be listening the following day, or maybe you don't listen right away. Maybe you're catching up on the 769 episodes prior to this one. Regardless of your listening habits, this is episode number 770, which is a 10th show, which means we go off topic and we talk about something of general life success. And today our guest will be Kimberly Guilfoyle. You've heard her on the news. She is a very well known and former spouse of someone who is very famous, who also almost got picked for a big position in our government. Almost. And almost, you know, only counts in horseshoes and atom bombs, right? As the old saying goes. Anyway, before we dive into that, I want to give you a little perspective on the millennial housing market. I saw an infographic that was interesting just the other day. It leaves out one giant, very, very important thing, and I will tell you what it is. Somewhere during my talk about this set of statistics that is the millennial housing market. Now, as you know from prior episodes, I've talked about the millennial generation a lot. That's Generation Y. These are the, some say, overly entitled generation of young adults that is rising up through the ranks. It is the largest demographic cohort in American history, slightly larger than the baby boomers that was the largest before them. And then in between the millennials and the baby boomers is my demographic cohort, Generation X. Yes, Gen X, that is yours truly. Your host is a Gen Xer. And the millennial generation came after me, and they are... Now, my generation was a really small generation, only about 46 million Americans, compared to 76 million baby boomers and 80 million millennials. I know, you may have heard some different statistics depending on where the demographer is making the cut on the year of birth for these different groups, but that's generally the way it is, okay? So the millennial generation being the largest, being the generation that was probably the most catered to generation in all history, in all human history. Yes, they were the ones carted around to their soccer games, and they were the ones that got the newest iPhone when it came out, and a lot of their parents were divorced. So when you have divorced parents, you sometimes get this war to win over the kids to see who the kid will like better, right? And, you know, sometimes a parent needs to be a parent, not a buddy, not a friend. And what the heck do I know about parenting, being a single guy who is looking for a wife and wants to have children? But I don't know anything about it yet, so I will stay away from parenting advice. But this millennial generation is really interesting when it comes to the housing market. So the thing that this does not tell you, that is this blinding missing statistic here that you really need to know, is that it doesn't talk about the size of the millennial home buying impact overall in the housing market. It only talks about that Gen Y or that millennial section of the housing market, not in comparison to the overall housing market. So you might look at these stats not knowing any better, but you know better, of course, because you listen to the show, and you might think, wow, well, this generation is a bunch of home buyers. They're just making this huge impact on the market. Well, not really, but here's what they're like when they're buying. Okay, so this does not compare them to the rest of the market. It only compares them to themselves. And basically, 77% of all mortgage loans for millennials are for purchases of a new home. 22% are for refinances. Now, we obviously left out 1%. I don't know what that's for, because 22 plus 77 is, well, 99. So they didn't tell you what the other 1% was. How much home are millennials buying? What's the average home price? $222,000, $222. I'm rounding a little bit here. And the average age of the millennial home buyer, what do you think that might be? It's 29 years old. And 66% of these millennial home buyers are male, and 31% are female. Now, here is probably one of the most interesting things to consider here. A happy home isn't just for the happy couple. 46% of buyers are single, and I want to say only, because this is a really small number from a historical home buying perspective, only 54% are married. Wow. Remember how I've talked to you about how the millennials are great renters because they are putting off family formation, household formation. They're not getting married very early. They are putting off marriage. They are saddled with a massive amount of student loan debt, and they like to be mobile. And they're into the sharing economy more than us more covetous generations, Gen X and the baby boomers and the maturers, who wanted to own things. The millennials have a mindset that relates to the sharing economy, the Airbnb economy, the Lyft and Uber and ride-sharing economy, and all of the other sharing economy concepts that are out there that are so interesting, that are really fundamentally changing things for so many people. So I just thought that would be interesting to kind of take a look at the millennial generation and see what they're all about before we get to our 10th show guest today. And one more thing I want to talk to you about, and I am really, I hope you're happy about this too, but I am happy about it because, you know, whenever the government tries to do this disgusting central planning, engineering of the economy, engineering of society in general, telling people how they should live and how they should act, and hey, listen, they're guilty of this on both sides of the aisle. The Republicans and the Democrats are both guilty of this. But here is an example where the Democrats are guilty of it. And Obama, you know, I'm so happy to see him leaving soon. the Obama regime. So this article I did not share with you. It's from several months ago. And this was one of Obama's plans this fall. And I believe that overall, the Obama presidency is a failed presidency. Thankfully, it is a failed presidency. Obamacare turned out to be pretty much a disaster. I think it's pretty hard to argue with that. You know, insurance prices have skyrocketed, competition has decreased, the big lie about you can choose your doctor, that won't change, well, that obviously was a big lie, and all of these other things, right? You know, the government is just not capable of handling such a large part of the economy. The government should mostly stay out of things, in my opinion. I've given you lots of evidence for that over the last 769 shows, but regardless of your political beliefs, here is one that I just want you to think about this. Most of you listening are homeowners, and most of you probably own fairly nice homes in fairly nice neighborhoods. And, you know, I have told you before about how it's, from a financial standpoint, and a convenience standpoint. If you're renting a high-end home rather than owning it, because we're all renters anyway, right? We don't really own anything. You know, I haven't ever seen luggage racks on top of a Hearst, right? We just get to be the trustee from birth to death, right? Of all our material possessions. And we've got to make them grow and use them wisely and spend money in a way that it will have the greatest impact on our lives and our future. And so can you imagine, just for a moment, if you bought or currently own a nice home in the suburbs and the government did this to you, okay? Think of it only from that perspective, not all of the other negative ramifications, right? So I'll just read you a little bit of this article. And you know what? Oh, this was in IBD, Investors Business Daily. And it's entitled, it's really a little subsection of an article, Diversifying the Suburbs. Obama's housing chief plans this fall, meaning, you know, right now, or just before right now, right around election time, right, and a little bit before, to implement a new rule giving Section 8 welfare recipients enough money to afford rent wherever they, to afford to rent wherever they choose, with the goal of driving them into affluent suburbs. Section 8 tenants who choose to stay in the city will lose subsidies. Here you have the government trying to engineer diversification in housing. I mean, this is absolutely disgusting in so many ways. The regime, that's what the article says, those aren't my words, is gearing up for a massive resettlement of urban poor, more than 350,000 people initially, followed by as many of the rest of the 2.2 million Section 8 tenants as they can push out of cities, all to end what the left, the political left they're meaning, calls American apartheid. Apartheid. Really? That is so inflammatory and so ridiculous. It's just ridiculous, right? If landlords fight the massive social experiment to radically and economically, not to mention politically, because it would, of course, change the voting districts, right? Talk about gerrymandering. This is a new form of gerrymandering. And economically, not to mention politically, integrate the suburbs, they'll be sued for discrimination. And if counties and municipalities fight it, they'll lose millions in federal funding. Obama is showing his radical roots in his final days in office. But if you think this is bad, just wait. His most dangerous days are yet to come. And people accuse Trump of being a racist and being a dictator. I mean, can you just imagine, like, what the impact of this type of thing would have been? Can you imagine, here you are, you worked hard all your life to be able to buy a home in a safe, low-crime neighborhood, like where I'm from in Orange County. Well, in L.A., I didn't live in those areas at all. In L.A., I lived in terrible areas growing up. I went to integrated schools. I got mugged in the hallway numerous times in junior high school and high school by kids that were, you know, bussed in. And I didn't live in a very good area myself, so it was very mixed, my schools, okay? They had the very poor going to school where I went to school. They had me at the lower end of the socioeconomic strata. And then they had some rich kids from Cheviot Hills in West Los Angeles that were in. And, you know, there we go, right? It was a total mix. I mean, it was a total mix. There was a lot of violence at my schools, a lot of car theft, or, you know, stereo theft out of cars, broken windows. You'd walk out to lunch when I went to Venice High School and you'd see broken car windows. And it happened to me once where they stole my stereo, broke the window right at lunch, you know, right before lunch. Okay. At school. I mean, you know, just unbelievable. Right. And can you imagine you worked all your life to try and live in a nice, safe neighborhood, and then some government dictator like Obama comes along and tries to ruin your neighborhood and decrease the value of your home and increase crime in your neighborhood. Unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. Okay? So, wow. Crazy. But that's not going to happen. So I guess we don't have to worry about it for now, right? So we shall see. Yeah, you know, of course, as landlords, we need to be very conscious of and make sure we're obeying equal opportunity and equal housing laws. But this isn't about that. This is about intentionally re-engineering society. I mean, unbelievable. Just, it's crazy. Crazy thing. So I'm sure I'll get a little hate mail on that one. And that, again, has nothing to do with fair housing and nothing to do with anything that, you know, would make any sense. This is central planning, and that's what communism is. That's an example of central planning, where the government thinks they know better than society in the free market. So there you go. Anyway, without further ado, let's get to our guest here, Kimberly Guilfoyle. And you've probably heard her on her various programs and newscasts and so forth. We'll cover that in the intro for her segment. And also, make sure you get your tickets for our upcoming Meet the Masters in January. It's going to be a fantastic event. We've got some great speakers lined up. And I'll tell you, if you have been to or thought about going to some of our markets and looking at the properties and meeting our teams there and coming on some of our property tours, that's all great. And you can do that. But I'll tell you something. If you want to do that really efficiently, you've got to come to Meet the Masters, because we have probably more local market specialists. I'm pretty sure we have more local market specialists and more new markets, as well as some of our established markets from across the country flying in to meet you for this Meet the Masters event. And we're doing the introductions and presentations of their markets quite a bit differently this time, thanks to one of our Venture Alliance members, Elizabeth, who's really given me some good ideas and feedback on that. I think it's going to be a lot more interactive, a lot more interesting than it has been in the past. And then, of course, we'll have all of our typical speakers that will talk about legal strategies and asset protection, and talk about tax planning and how you can use the most historically, not just most historically proven asset class in the world, but the most tax-favored asset class in America to your advantage. We're going to talk about hard money lending. We're going to talk about a lot of different stuff in the realm of financing. It's just going to be a great Meet the Masters event, and it's going to be different than the past ones. We really try to keep these new and stimulating and change them up to keep your attention and keep your interest. So go to jasonhartman.com, click on the events section, get your tickets for Meet the Masters in Irvine, California, as soon as you can, and we will look forward to seeing you there. Let's get to our guest and talk to Kimberly. It's my pleasure to welcome Kimberly Guilfoyle to the show. She is co-host of The Five and Outnumbered on the Fox News Channel. She's contributor to The O'Reilly Factor and Hannity. She's a guest host for On the Record with Greta Van Susteren and author of Making the Case, How to Be Your Own Best Advocate. Kimberly, welcome. How are you?
Oh, great to be on your program. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. And just give our listeners a sense of geography. Where are you located?
So I'm located in New York City in Manhattan, and that's where I live and reside. And I'm originally from San Francisco. I was born and raised there and also lived in Los Angeles, California.
Fantastic. And you were the former First Lady of San Francisco, is that correct?
Yes, I was. Yes, I was a First Lady of San Francisco and also a former prosecutor in San Francisco, head of the trial division there, working on career criminal cases and homicides, and then also worked at the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office and eventually made my way to New York City, uh-huh, taking a different career path and change in my life that actually proved to be a great decision for me personally, professionally, and financially, and moving to New York to have opportunities to work in television and, of course, address a larger audience, and then eventually, you know, writing a book that's become a national bestseller called Making the Case, How to Be Your Own Best Advocate, where I go through my life and talk about the different choices that I've made, the different paths, different options that have presented themselves, how I've handled things both, you know, personally and professionally.
Fantastic. Boy, I bet you could tell some amazing stories with your life experience, especially as a prosecutor.
That's cool.
Yeah, definitely. What are you up to nowadays in New York? I want to dive back into the book and talk about some of the different chapters there, but maybe just update us on what you're doing now. Is it mostly television then? Is that your main thing?
Yeah, so I live in New York City and I work for the Fox News Channel. And it's been a wonderful different career progression from working as a prosecutor and then going to do television, become a legal analyst and commentator, and then segueing that into a new opportunity of anchoring and doing news of the day. And now I'm one of the co-hosts of the wildly successful show The Five on the Fox News Channel from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern. It's a roundtable discussion. Five of us sit at the table. It's kind of like think about your family on Thanksgiving, mixing it up, getting into it, talking about whatever the news of the day is. We'll start off with some more like hard-hitting subjects, whether it's foreign policy, national security, the economy, and then later in the program we move into more what we call like water cooler subjects, which is different cultural things going on, big stories, or what's the big talker of the day. So it's pretty fun. It's the number one show at 5 o'clock in all of cable, and then in the area of news, the only other two shows that beat us would be Bill O'Reilly and Megyn Kelly, so both at Fox, but we beat all 24 other hours of cable news, whether it's CNN, MSNBC, Headline News, Bloomberg, all of the above.
Mm-hmm. We're not too focused on really, really current events on the show because podcasts are perennial, obviously. But with your involvement in Fox, and you did mention Megyn Kelly, I just got to ask you, any comments on the war between her and Donald Trump by chance?
Yeah, I mean, we've put that, you know, behind us. I think the debate was a huge success. 24 million people watched it. I think Chris Wallace and Bret Baier and Megyn Kelly did an outstanding job for the 9 o'clock debate. I think people got to see and learn a lot about the different candidates. And I think anytime you're doing live television like that and discussing important issues, there's going to be some exciting, television-worthy moment.
Right.
And then also the earlier debate was such a standout with Carly Fiorina, and that was hosted by Martha McCallum and Bill Hemmer.
Yeah, I know. Carly really shined in that one. Very interesting. We had Megyn Kelly's husband on the show before talking about his book, The Ghost of Manhattan, I believe it's called, or The Ghost of Wall Street.
Yeah, they're a wonderful couple, and he's, widely regarded in such a wonderful, positive way. She's a great role model for women. She's tough and strong and confident. She asks great, tough questions. She doesn't back away from it. So, I think she's really done a lot in terms of advancing the ideas of women in journalism and in reporting.
Yeah, excellent. Good stuff. On the book, talking about careers and career success, what's your take on that?
Well, I think that, it's really important to be able to do something that you feel very passionate about. So when you wake up in the morning and you go to bed at night, you feel a sense of accomplishment, a sense of bliss, like this is what I've been meant to be doing. I really enjoy it. I'm going to make it happen today no matter what. I don't like when people like mail it in and just doing the job to collect a paycheck. I like someone who's passionate about what they do, and people should be. When you think about how you're spending your time, and a lot of it is at work and with your colleagues, are you doing something that you enjoy? And I really feel that if you're courageous and you move into a field that, is something that you really love to do, that you've always wanted to do, that there is an ability and a way to monetize that, and that you likely will be successful at it if you're fully invested and committed to your career and what you're doing. And I've lived my life like that, not being afraid to make choices at different points in my life when I felt I needed a change, or maybe there was a new growth opportunity for me where you needed to be courageous and fearless and seize the moment to do something different, create a new chapter in your life so that you have that sense of purpose.
What do you think about playing by the rules?
Listen, I mean, I'm a former prosecutor, so, I like rules. I embrace and love the law and the Constitution. So I think that you can play within the rules and still play fast and hard and give it your best. And I think that's the best way because, rules are there to have some kind of order and uniformity to, level the playing field, but not fix the outcome.
You've obviously done a great job networking and developing powerful friendships. Tell us a little bit more about that.
I think it's really important to surround yourself with people that are uplifting, that are winners, that are passionate about what they are doing, that can give sound advice. There aren't going to be people that are going to be negative to take you down. For example, our chairman and fearless leader at Fox News, Roger Ailes, he's my boss, but he's also a personal friend of mine, someone that I admire greatly and has been a wonderful mentor to me and many others. He talks about how negative people can make positive people sick. It's true. You've got to think about who you're around, the energy, the ideas, the enthusiasm, what people have to say. Like, life is hard enough without people trying to tell you that you can't do it or trying to hold you back. And I see sometimes people limiting themselves by the kind of people they associate with. And that's why I try to always, like, talk to, meet with, work with people that I feel are engaging and dynamic and are similarly situated in terms of wanting to make the most out of life and also wanting to pay it forward. So, you know, I really do try to network and talk to people who have areas, you know, of expertise. Like, for example, if I'm investing in doing things in real estate, which I'm, you know, very quite frequently do, I will go and talk to different, I'll help, you know, different brokers or different contractors or different people in the field to be able to have a greater understanding of how I can move the ball forward and improve my portfolio or my financial position. So there's plenty of people out there, believe me, willing to talk and willing to give advice and pay it forward. So I seek those people out, and those have been very rewarding and profitable experiences in my life.
Well, Kimberly, I love real estate investing, and I know a lot of our listeners do too. What attracted you to that field?
You know, because I think it's something that if you put the energy and the effort in, that if you're a creative, you're willing to take some good calculated, sound risks, that you can actually do quite well, especially when, you know, taking advantage, availing yourself of some of the financial incentives out there with interest-only loans, et cetera, especially in strong markets. I've been able to, you know, with very little money, put money down, fix up a place, do something, you know, turn around and sell it. And it's been some of the best decisions that I've made in my life. That's actually been the most profitable, you know, area of my life. And then next up would be, you know, anchoring and working in television. But people just, they're not aware. They're not aware of all those opportunities out there. And so, you know, I've done quite well, even though having, you know, not been in New York very long. I've, you know, sold several properties, I think three now in the past, God knows, 5 years. So I tend to do this and do well at it. And it's kind of been able to separate me from the herd, from the pack, because I'm able to sit there and say, well, how can I use this as an opportunity to create more wealth or more, you know, a better financial stability for me and my son.
Yeah, absolutely. The interesting thing about real estate is that unlike the financial services industry, the Wall Street plan, they will come to you. And so they make it easy. But Kimberly, you said, you know, if you put a little effort into it, you've got to sort of seek real estate out most of the time. You know, it doesn't sort of come to us. You don't see ads in all the magazines and all over the place. There's not that giant marketing machine for it that you have for stocks and Wall Street type investments. And I agree with you. You know, it's the leverage you alluded to that you can put very little down and have very big upside returns and amplify them. The late Archimedes said, give me a lever long enough and I will move the entire world. So that leverage is a very, very powerful component of it.
Yeah, and having that leverage and, you know, just even like working with contractors and people, networking, being smart. You know, I interviewed 7 contractors on my last deal. I really wanted to find someone that I could partner with, that I could make a good, you know, relationship with to be able to go forward to the next, you know, project. And it's about finding your right team and your right fit that works with, you know, your portfolio and what you have to offer. So that's been an exciting new thing that I do, you know, separate from working in television, separate from writing books. I tell all, you know, the people that I advise and give talks to about having multiple revenue streams and being recession-proof so that you're not just like all in eggs in one basket, like they say. I try and really have a diversified portfolio, whether it's in my financial investments or my different revenue streams, and it's proved to be wildly successful for me.
Yeah, absolutely. You have a chapter in the book about dating and marriage. How did you happen to meet Gavin Newsom?
So we were introduced in San Francisco through some mutual friends, and I met and knew his father, who was a judge, and one of their best friends, an attorney in San Francisco, also another close childhood friends of his, Billy Getty. And we were all friends, and then eventually, you know, we always seemed to get along and like each other and have a passion for giving back to the community and for public service, and I think that really, you know, drew us together. I liked his work ethic, just his attitude and about paying it forward. And so, you know, we ended up getting together from that vantage point.
What are your thoughts and lessons that you've learned about dating and marriage that you share in the book?
You know, that it's just, it's not easy. Don't be afraid to make mistakes or to fail, but be courageous to get up and try and do it again. I believe in great love. I believe in the power, you know, of relationships and of marriage. And sometimes it doesn't work out if two people aren't, you know, well-suited. You can be well-intentioned, but don't be afraid to then try and take another chance, you know. Don't be so much worried about what other people think, but listen to what's in your heart and try and leave yourself open, because you can have some really great opportunities and moments and experiences and relationships in life if you're not sitting hiding in the corner. And I always tell people too, and especially women, like, don't be afraid to network here, you know, network for your heart, to be able to ask people to set you up, introduce you to someone. Perhaps they know someone that's also looking. I can't be shy about these things, because it's not going to come to you. Whether it's a job, I tell the young graduates, I say, you know, the job fair truck isn't going to pull up in front of your apartment and give you a 401k and a key to an apartment on Park Avenue and a great job. Like, you've got to distinguish yourself. You've got to get out there. You've got to take meetings. You've got to get internships and take experience and make people want to invest in you. So God helps those who help themselves, and I really believe that. And it's the same thing applies to the principles of dating and marriage. And so I tell people, you know, unless you see it's something that's going to work out for you, don't sit there and invest, be with somebody 3-4 years, whatever. That's an investment too of your time, of your heart, of your energy, of your emotion. So I tell them, listen, if it's somebody you want to be with, then you got to try and close them. Close them like you close the deal, you know, in business. So my girlfriend's always saying to me, Kimberly, we're not closers. Teach us how to be closers.
I love that. That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
sounds
great
good.
Advice.
I'm good at getting proposals for myself and for my girlfriend.
Absolutely. Very good advice. Good job being a wing woman, right?
Yes, exactly.
That's great. You also talk in the book about family drama. And, you know, every time around the holidays, you know, there are all these news stories about, you know, how to deal with family situations and things like that. And, you know, this really weighs on a lot of people. What is your advice on that component of life?
Yeah, you got to, like, make it count and don't have grudges and hold on to things. I mean, I tell people, you know, especially that how important family is. And to really try to be sensitive to be understanding. Don't make it about you, but, you know, see what you can do to try and understand where they're coming from. Ultimately, everyone in your circle is going to benefit from it. If you have a positive home environment, if you have in-laws trying to make the extra step to show them how much you love, you know, their loved one and, you know, why you were a good choice, I think it's important. You don't just marry or get involved with an individual. You're in with the family, which I think is so important, you know, to be able to know that. And you want them to feel good about the choice that whether it's their son or daughter or whoever, you know, is making and choosing to invest in you. I take that really seriously. I love family. And so I operate from kind of that perspective. And, you know, life is too short. I tell people, having lost my father and, you know, and my mother, you know, I know, gosh, what would I give, you know, to have them here with me today? I'm so lucky because I have my beautiful little boy, Ronan, who is my heart and my treasure, and he's just, you know, wonderful, and I go out of my way to, you know, spend time, you know, with him and to have a great positive environment for him. I'm very close to his grandparents on his dad's side, and, you know, I work really hard to co-parent with his father, Eric, who I greatly admire and respect.
Fantastic. You conclude the book with asking for help, giving help, receiving help once you get it. What would be some of your advice there?
You know, don't be shy. At the end of your life, you want to say that you live a life with no regrets, that you have put it all out there, that you weren't afraid to take and to make those great moments where you're letting someone know how you feel, or you've asked for that position or that job and you've believed in yourself. It's a great way to live. It's a great way to show other people the example, the life lesson in the way that you live your life. My parents certainly did that, you know, for me. And, you know, you can't be able to be afraid to be your own advocate. I know my father used to say to me, Kimberly, you want something, you know, go to your room, prepare, come back and make your best arguments, present your case, make your case to me. And he always told me, never be afraid of the no. And it's so true. Like, don't be afraid of a word. It's two letters. No, because one day you can turn it into a yes. You learn, you grow, you figure out how to do it better and how to do it smarter. But at least you know you've asked versus wondering and thinking about it and regretting weeks, months, years down the road. So free yourself, open yourself up to the experience, the power of people, of possibility, and that's what I try to do every day and make it count.
That is fantastic. I love that idea of, as a kid, go to your room and make your best argument and come back. No wonder you ended up as a lawyer, right? That's fantastic.
Isn't it so true?
Yeah.
That's why I tell people this was an accident. I was coached into the courtroom, you know, about how to be a great advocate, and then I used and turned those skills into advocacy for others in fighting on behalf of victims of violent crime, seeking justice, and it was one of the greatest experiences and career, certainly, you know, of my lifetime. And now I educate the public, whether through doing interviews like this or on television, in speaking events, etc., to be able to talk about law, talk about politics, talk about my experience and try and give back. And that was one of the reasons why I wrote the book, because I was getting so many questions about how people could do this in their life and how did I end up where I am. And, you know, through trial and tribulation and different chapters and being courageous and not being afraid to like pivot and go in another direction and pick yourself up. Sometimes we have to do that. We have to pick yourself up, and like, you can't be sitting there waiting for somebody else to do it for you, right? Like, own it and feel it within yourself. People are attracted to individuals like that, that are strong, compelling, and that really put it all out on the line and being fearless.
I love your attitude about that, about the self-reliance, going for things, and being, as you said earlier, a closer. Great advice. Excellent
closer.
Advice. Yeah, no question. Kimberly, where can people find you online?
So, yeah, KimberlyGuilfoyle.com. You can also get my book on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, and you can see me on air every Monday through Friday for sure at 5 o'clock Eastern, you know, on the 5. We even have, like, Fox on the Go apps where you can watch them from your phone as well. So, you know, those are all the great places that people can check me out and get to know more about me. And I really was very revealing in the book in the hopes that I might reach and touch other people's lives and make their lives a little bit better and more, you know, more interesting. So I've been really appreciative of the response and the feedback and the connection with people that I meet.
Excellent. Well, Kimberly, thank you so much for sharing with us today. That's Kimberly Guilfoyle, author of Making the Case, and then, of course, on Fox News. Thank you. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, my friend, and have a great weekend.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, HartmanMedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.